Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Tal Mandelbaum. Hello. And today we'd like to talk a bit about interpersonal communication. We live our life around us. There are other people. It could be at work, at home, in other places. And nowadays, communication isn't doing that great. There are many frictions, eruptions, and so on. We'd like to learn how to do it a bit better. Be with us, Tal, please. Yeah, today I'd like for us to focus on communication within relationships. I heard this claim that the main reason it doesn't work is because there's this approach that there's someone who's right and someone who's wrong. And then in our relationship, we all the time try to show the other person that they're wrong and I'm right. And this impairs our ability to reach a good and empathic kind of communication. If something bothered me about our relationship and I'll tell someone else what you did was wrong, you hurt me, and so on, most chances are that the answer that I'll get won't be one of acceptance, of sympathy, but to the contrary, it will create a conflict that the other person will say that you're wrong, and so on, and so forth. So today we'd like to understand how to build a correct kind of communication within our relationships. So the first question is, do you agree that as an assumption that behind every negative behavior of any person, there is an unfulfilled desire or need, an unmet desire or need, that this is why they behave the way that they do? Yes, but there is a reason that's even prior to that, that man is an egoist. And he has to prove to himself all the time that he's right. And the lack of satisfaction to feel that he's right, that he feels that he's appreciated, this feeling is something that exists in him all the time in a more revealed or in a more concealed way. And sometimes he's really helpless, that he can't justify his existence. What am I living for? I'm not appreciated. No one's keeping me, supporting me. I'm not treated the way I deserve to be treated. And this is where the problem is. Sometimes I see this in relationships that even if I heard the slightest, tiniest criticism or something that upsets me, immediately it affects the entire relationship. I no longer appreciate anything and so on. Why? The tiniest thing can destroy everything. It's forbidden for us to turn to any person in a way that we accuse them of something, that we put that person down, that we show him that he's inferior. But we always have to elevate that person. I want for that person to change for the better. I elevate him to such a degree that he'll be afraid to come down from there. And by that, I correct him. I elevate him to such a degree that he's afraid to come down from there. He'll want to remain there and be even more and more, see how great I am. And let him think that. The main thing is that he'll behave accordingly. It's really an entire inner revolution for a person. Yeah? And then, by that, I can correct criminals and such people that never thought about behaving properly. Suddenly, they start feeling how I'm being treated, what people think about me, how everyone respects me. I feel that I'm like a king. And then that person will do everything that he can to stay that way and become even more. I want to give an example from life. Many times in the generation gap, we see young parents bring their children to their grandparents, and the grandparents, they have these habits from the past, like giving candy, sugar, and so on. And when the parents tell the grandparents the way you behave with the children isn't the way we do, then, you know, there are different explosions, conflicts. I raised you, and you turned out fine, and so on and so forth. It's an example where communication can bring a solution that's good for everyone. What communication? You have to have education here. If I come to my mom with my children, this is how it really was for years, then really, my children and even my grandchildren, when they used to come to grandma, they got different sweets and everything there is, in short, many things. And I only used to say, look how much grandma loves you and this and that. Even though that really these things aren't that good. And even though that she's a doctor and she always made sure that everyone's fit and healthy, but in this regard, she was weak. Yeah, grandmas have this instinct that they have to give candy. Can't you do anything about it? Can't you talk to a person and ask, please change something in what you're doing? No. I also want to give her an opportunity to be happy that she can give them something. What can you do? But it spoils the children. They won't be spoiled because of that. That they come once every few weeks or even once a week to grandma and get 100 or 200 grams of candy. In my case, it could be more than once a week. We live close to each other. And so maybe in this case, you can say, but still, that it's not because of you, but that you took the children to the doctor or the dentist. And this is what he said, and so on. Meaning that it's not up to you, but it's up to some foreign factor. Grandma can get mad at the doctor, no problem. It's really frustrating that you can't ask for something. No, you can't. Love, in this regard, is blind. What do you mean? Because I love giving candy to whomever I love. But it's not healthy. Why don't you give him instead of that a piece of meat or something? Or some vegetable. It's healthier. Some cabbage. Well, it's just one example, but there are many such examples. With toys, it's even worse. There, it's already an ideological matter. What do I, what don't I give, and so on. So you can't come to a person that thinks something and ask him to behave differently? No, you have to relate it to some foreign factor. What is it about the connection that doesn't allow it? It's a person's pride or what? You're not allowing the grandma to open her heart to her grandchildren. This is severe. Very severe. From that point on, she will not forgive you. I'm telling you seriously. She will not forgive you for it ever. It's not up to her. This is how it is, rooted in nature. This is specifically in regard to grandparents and their grandchildren, but even if I'll come up to my husband and I'll tell him that he's doing something wrong and so on, it could cause a conflict. Meaning there is something about the communication itself that doesn't work. True. What principle do we have to learn here? The principle is that you never tell a person that he is to blame, at fault, that he's wrong, that he's incomplete. But if he is wrong, if he is at fault, obviously he's at fault and he's wrong. But how to say it, how to correct it, then not in the way that you're presenting it. How then? You have to reach a state where it's good if you hear that he made some kind of mistake, but not in relation to you. And then he's looking for some kind of advice as to how to get out of that situation. And then you can intervene and speak your mind, because in that you're helping him. You're not saying anything against him. And also that you're telling him now how to behave, you're saying, I saw in some place or I learned in this and that course that this is the way to do it, look what they explained. Not me, but it seems to me that It suits your case. To get myself as little as possible into this, because otherwise what? It creates a struggle of forces. Yeah, because I position myself against grandma. But no, this is what the doctor said. The dentist said that it's critical. Otherwise we'll have to do surgery. So if the child has an allergy or something, then it's clear. It's hard to accept it because if you know that this is a mistake, this is wrong, and still you want to do something, you can't say anything. You can say anything, but only in a way that it'll be accepted. So on another show, we said that in order to bring a person to the place where you want them to be, you have to prepare them. Yeah, you have to plan these things too. So how can I be smarter? How can I prepare in order to bring the grandmother or whoever to the place I want them to be? So much that you talk to the dentist or the pediatrician, and you take your child there, and the doctor explains that it's forbidden to eat candy or something and so on. And then, when you're at grandma's, then you ask, "Sweetie, you remember we went to the doctor's?" "Yeah." "And what did he say?" And she herself says, "Grandma," and that's that. So, if we're already mentioning children, then in the relationships between parents and children, there's an entire theory that talks about how to talk to them so it will be empathic communication. Many times the children, they cry, they're sad, and the instinct, at least in previous generations, was to say, "Nah, don't worry, everything's fine." Meaning to stop that child's emotion, saying that what you're feeling now, you shouldn't be feeling. You shouldn't be angry. You shouldn't be sad. And there's an approach today that says, no, that you actually have to identify with the child that was hard, it hurt you. A child has to see that you're identifying with them, that you love them regardless of or above all of these things, no matter what happens. First of all, love. Even if he's wrong, and you bet he's wrong, and I told him so, and that he'll suffer as a result, and he didn't listen to me, and he suffered, and he got blows and everything. In this, I want to show him that I'm with him, that you're suffering with him, that you're identifying with his pain, and so on. Yeah, it's not simple. I know this about myself, that even though that you're doing everything good and for his sake and so on, still you want to put in some moral. Told you so. Right. But no. To only show love. Okay, it's not simple, and but this way you're sure that the same way you treat him, the same way you care for him, he will care for your grandchildren. This is how he'll treat them. And even your grand-grandchildren, when you won't be around anymore, it'll pass on to your offsprings. I just wanted to add that today, adults can say about themselves that because their parents told them that they don't have to cry, that everything's fine, they stopped identifying with their own emotions. They stopped understanding, feeling what they themselves feel. They as if disregard what they feel and only listen to what other people tell them they should feel. Is it correct that as a parent we should make room for a child's emotions so that he'll learn how to identify his own emotions and make room for them? I wouldn't say that a child has to hold himself back. What do you mean? He feels like crying, he should. He feels like shouting, he should. Let him burst out, go wild, according to his inner urges. What's the significance of a person being able to feel his own emotions without blurring them? And then he better knows who he is, and not that someone stopped him and he stops himself and so on, and he buries these feelings inside and it doesn't allow him to keep developing, because to the measure to which he closes himself, he can't develop. Why? These are two contradicting things. So suppose now the child's angry at us, at the parents, and the egoistic instinct of a parent is to be mad back at them. Don't shout at me, this, that. What should be the correct approach toward an angry child in order to neutralize it in the correct way? To accept this anger, that it's present, okay, but I relate to it calmly. He can be angry, he can shout, he can say mom and dad are bad, and whatever he thinks, but that he integrates with his emotions, that I don't stop that. And that when he behaves the way he does, that he will see that my attitude toward him is calm, normal, like toward everyone. And he's like, and I'm calm, like toward everyone else. And then he'll start asking what's going on here. And this will make him change. What will he understand? He will understand that maybe he's doing something wrong in this behavior, that my behavior, and it doesn't matter what are we talking about here, but that my behavior is more respectable. So he'll want to behave more like you. Yeah. And what if I get mad back at him? So what am I showing him then? That it's okay just to be in confrontation, to shout at each other, to fight. I don't want to give him this kind of example. Would it be true to say that behind a child's negative behavior, when he goes wild or treats others unfavorably, there is some unsatisfied desire, and I have to find what causes him to behave negatively, and if I find what that thing is and I meet his needs indirectly, I've solved the problem. Yes. Aside from special cases where children really go crazy and you have to shake them a bit or even give them a little slap in order to stop this outburst. But here we're already talking about a medical condition. So my ability to identify something more inner, some need that exists in a person, and to meet that need instead of directly trying to stop that behavior, yes, that he'll learn from it himself. And even if it's a grown-up that's mad at me, maybe he says different things, I don't even hear what he's saying, I only understand that he's lacking something on the inside, and if I give him love and all the things that we talked about, this will help him overcome his anger. Yeah, tell him, I think that you're right. Why does a person have to hear that? If he'll hear that, for him it's the biggest blow. Because he's expecting some kind of response. He wants to continue. And suddenly you neutralize all of his weapons. How to correctly behave with another person that's angry at me or I'm angry at them, to agree with them. I think that you're right. I'm even worse than what you're saying. That's terrible to hear that. This is a very serious blow to hear something like that. Yeah, it is. So what do we have to do about ourselves in order to be able to reach the state where we tell someone else that they're right? Because mostly we don't have the ability to do that. We have to justify ourselves. If it doesn't have to do with my work or something, that it's about the direction, the goal, everything else. About what we talked before, we said that a child always has to feel that I love him above everything. I wrote it down as a principle, that I love him no matter what. And also you said that it's not always easy because sometimes I see that he's wrong and so on, but still, I love him. Sometimes there could be such states where children use these states, these situations. Meaning what? How do I, as a parent, find the boundary between expressing infinite love and certain boundaries without which the child will fall apart and it will harm him. It's a big problem. How do I as a parent find what's right between these two extremes? Love is good if it is within limitations, within boundaries. Otherwise, it isn't. In order to love, you have to have a heart of stone. Meaning what? Softness has to come with inner hardness. That it's measured, controlled, under control. Of course. And then I present myself outwards as someone soft and loving, but on the inside I keep the boundaries and I don't allow for them to be breached. A bit more about how to do it. Up until now we talked about that a child always has to feel the confidence that at home he's always loved. That he always has to feel at home, that no matter what I did, I failed, I did something, I whatever. This is where I'm loved, and there is room for me to find all those emotions that surface in me and to evolve from here, not to suppress. What does it mean to evolve? That I, as a child, do the math. That I'm really allowed to do, and I have the confidence to be as a free and open. But still, how, from this point on, every time do I calibrate myself to behave correctly? What gives a child the understanding of how to behave correctly if you only show him love and acceptance, no matter what he does? We have to show it to him that our love also isn't limitless or unbounded, but it's on condition. We support him on condition that he learns from it. Otherwise, no. And here we have to really keep the boundary. So if my child's wrong, he did something even though that I said don't do it, that if you don't put on a shirt you'll catch a cold, and he did, so I don't come and say because you didn't listen to me now you have a cold, but I'm empathic to how he feels and so on. But how will I make it so that next time he'll listen to me? Next time you can tell him, you remember, you didn't listen last time and what happened. Yeah, exactly. In these things, it's better for children. In the past, this is how it was common, to write a diary, to learn from our mistakes. Yeah? And then, when he writes it himself, then let's see, 3-4 weeks ago, what happened to us. Good idea for us grown-ups, too. So, one more thing I read about and wanted to ask, do we have to get rid of being judgmental in relation to the emotions and responses of the other? An important thing about empathic communication is that you respect the other person as they are. You're not judgmental. You don't show that you're like better. How important is equality between two people in order for them to be able to come closer in their relationship and so on? If we're talking about two adults, then here we already have to think. Here it's a much more complicated relationship. There's no dependence here. Or there is, but we have to see what kind of dependence do we have here. Is there or isn't there love and so on? Meaning, depends who are we talking about. We have to see exactly what are we talking about, and then suppose our spouse. When my spouse responds in a certain way, I'm immediately judgmental. He doesn't have to think that way, feel that way, and then it pushes away. No, that will never work. Only and concessions, meaning what? That I accept the other as they are without wanting to change them, but I change myself, I adapt myself to them. Why? Because otherwise it won't work. But there are things in that you will feel that you're gaining, actually. But sometimes, in general, I understand what you're saying, but sometimes there could be things in your spouse that you have to change. So, after you reach some kind of happy middle, a good relationship, take an hour and talk about it. Talk about it, please, no problem. But it should be agreed upon that this is what you do. And also, never to bring it to a fight. Don't think that after the fight, we're going back to something good. It never comes back to anything good. So, where should we stop? What boundary shouldn't we breach? We agree with one another that we can stop our fight with a kiss. That's it. Everyone is allowed to kiss the other, and there we stop. So what I understand from today's show is that to directly turn to a person with my opinion, my desire, with what I feel, and so on, it'll never work. There always has to be some kind of a concession about what I feel, want, and so on, in order to turn to the other person in a way that it'll encourage him and he'll be willing to hear. Yes, and the other person can't refuse. This is the only thing that we ask of the other person. And should the work be mutual? Of course. If one of them says, that's it, I can't take this anymore, I'm gonna kiss you, the other person can't refuse. Should the other person also make concessions towards me? This means that he's making concessions, that he comes and kisses. But if he's still accusing me of something, no, we're through with the accusations. We're finished with that scrutiny. We can say, in 2 or 3 days, we're going to talk about it. In 2 or 3 days, when everything's good, nice, soft, we decided that now we're going to talk about this, let's talk. Like in basketball. Time out. Dr. Lightman, last question. When a person concedes, you said that concessions are the key to nonviolent empathic communication. Yes, what do I concede? My pride. That's it. Some rubbish, some inflated balloon in my stomach. That's it. Were we able to do it, the world would have been a better place. Thank you very much, dear friends. Thank you, Dr. Lightman. Thank you, Todd. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.